Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spoken Heard. This is Susan W. Chase, and today I'm thrilled to bring you my guest, Mr. Kerry Jackson. He's got so many talents, and I'm just thrilled to have him today. So hello, Kerry. How are you?
I'm good. It's pronounced Kari, though.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I just feel horrible about that. Kari. Geez.
No problem. No problem.
I've been calling you the wrong thing in my head for years. So I was just sort of wondering what's going on with you in your time right now or in the past or what's coming up soon? I know you have lots of exciting things.
I'm working on a number of things. I'm kind of laying low and just working on my own stuff, not really doing much publicly these days except for there's a improv comedy group, an all-black comedy improv group in the Twin Cities called Blackout, and that's been
nice.
A really fun thing to be a part of the last couple of years. I'm not an improv performer, but I play music, so that's what I do with them. So that's been a really fun thing.
What are you doing music-wise with them?
I play like musical accompaniment to like support the scenes that they improvise.
Oh, nice, nice. So you can improvise with music, but you don't want to get on stage and improvise in scenes. What a wonderful way to handle that.
Yeah, it works for me. I do enough performing in, like, poetry. I don't need to do this, too.
Right, exactly. So I know that you've been working on a book series. You want to talk a little bit about that to get us going?
Yeah, it's a superhero novel series the first book starts in 2084. And so I've been kind of digging into that world, and it's been an interesting balance of like how much world building do you do based on my premise, which is not very far from today, but it's after a nuclear war. So, you know, nuclear war has greatly like destroyed most of what we had. And so by the time the book picks up, they're kind of picking up where we left off a little bit. They're maybe a little bit ahead of us. So it's just fun deciding like what's radically different and what is very similar to right now.
And how do you decide that?
It's sort of a gut thing. Like the most radical thing that's different is random people discover that they have superpowers they didn't have before, and they're trying to figure out how to navigate in a world where most people don't know this is happening and don't understand, and yet they have no guidance either. No one's showing them how to do this, so they're just kind of figuring it out and messing up and succeeding along the way.
Nice. And so you've already finished the first one, if I'm correct, and you're working on the second one right now?
Yep.
Yeah. So I know you put in a lot of time with it. When you're not working, you have a day job and everything, but I give you tons and tons of credit for going into something so encompassing and doing it for a couple of years now. It sounds like a wonderful venture, and I'm always in favor when people spread their wings and grow a little bit. And I'm glad to see this side of your talents coming out too, not just poetry, but also fiction and music and dancing. And you have so many talents. So I was wondering, since I just mentioned that, if I could segue right into having you share one of your pieces with us.
Yeah, got it right here. It's a poem called Hip Hop Yoga. Ten short parts. Don't worry, it's not a 10-minute poem. all right, hip hop yoga. One, Your throat chakra is cracked open by the snare. Your head rocks with the stress of the neck. The beat booming in your chest, you bloom into a 16-bar bodhisattva. 2. You hear a hissing nearby as if from a snake, but you know now it is spray paint. Your north side temple is being tagged. 3. Your body stretches forward, bent back, straight spine, hands posed behind you, locked at the wrist. You whisper namaste while bent over a cop car. The uniformed man behind you speaks, but you hear no human in his voice. 4. Eyes closed. You meditate to the music bouncing from the speakers in your car. It is the longest red light on MLK Boulevard. 5. You bought this suit because it was both professional and flexible. Every job interview is a downward-facing dog. You update your resume in a handstand. You are praying mantis at the bus stop. 6. They call it Savasana, the corpse pose. Your nephew has learned it so well. Is so relaxed. Through your tears, you wonder if he is still breathing from the hole in his chest. 7. Meditation. You've no words to describe the DJ materializing from the dust, levitating cross-legged 4 feet in the air. His hands are poised above a record and needle. The record spins a glorious nothing. 8. Before the beatbox, there was the mouth. Before the microphone, there was the throat. Before the spray, before the wall, there were the fingertips and palms and the lover's body that allowed them. We were already born weeping to the beat. We already knew to wave our hands in the air. 9. The breaker is sweating in pranayama. The breaker is the vindicating saint. He spins and flips hosannas on a north side's behalf. His entire choreography is 47 poses chained together, enough to bless every soul at the party. He moves as if we're dying, as if paradise has an expiration date. His hands balance and propel, feet sliding and spinning. His torso, the burnt flesh, singing in tongues. 10. One forgiveness later, you are home with a bouquet of groceries in your arms. Your husband slowly washes your feet. Together, you speak nothing of nirvana, nothing to break the hush of loving the food away.
Oh, bravo. Just incredible. And I really love... Well, there are several pieces of it that I just love. And basically, I think that a lot of it is because of the very, your insight into Eastern philosophy, certainly. But then there's also, how you transpose that to sit right next to juxtapose what it is that you're saying about modern society. With a beautiful rhythm and some really great imagery. So I just loved that piece. Where did that come from? Where did it start?
I get drawn to ideas or topics that don't seem to fit together and finding a through line between them. And so I think this is one of those poems where I was really interested in how does hip-hop culture, urban reality, and spirituality blend? Like, what's a way of many ways that they could blend?
And what brought this to mind for you?
I think it's just part of, like, me. I mean, I'm from Detroit. I do view myself as a hip-hop-centered creator. But I also interpret hip hop to be a lot more malleable than others may consider it. So it's more of a mindset than anything else to me.
And that's why
I look for that.
And is that why that it's taken on like the Eastern religious kind of background because of your reverence, or have you been involved in yoga, or is it because it's something modern and popular versus something that some people say is dead and other people say is being reborn? Speak to that for me a little bit.
I don't practice yoga. I had to research more about it to learn some of these things to then apply to the poem. but it was more about, I think in a way it was asking the reader, can you envision hip hop existing in this way as well to what you already had envisioned?
Yes. Yes, indeed. I definitely got that from it. Definitely. Is this a piece you've used in competition before?
No.
No.
I think it's good for like what I categorize poems as is, as far as performance poems go, there are poems that are good for competition and there are poems that are good for feature performances. And this would be when I'd say it's a feature performance because you have time to give context to it and then they can fully appreciate it.
Are you traveling around doing features right now? I know that you've kind of stepped away from performance poetry while you're working on your novels. Are you still doing features?
Not really. Once in a while, I'll do something if it works out schedule-wise and everything. So, you know, maybe a couple times a year I'll do something at this point. But most of the time I find myself coming back to the same poems that I've been, like the ones I'm reading today, the first two are still from the books that I put out 4 years ago, and it's still, these are still some of my favorite poems, so I'm still doing stuff with them, playing with recording and creating like musical soundtracks to some of them and stuff like that. So still
in love.
Yeah.
Do you think that you'll be putting out some sort of CD or something where you can capture that without the live performance? I know it's difficult for performance poetry, but do you think you'll be putting out something that will try to lend itself to what you've been in, you know, mixing different art forms with?
I mean, we'll see what comes together. I'm very open to different things. If there's an opportunity to make a video, like I've also been thinking about doing a live performance where it's mostly like physical action and dancing to the soundtrack of poems and music with it. So I'm still throwing stuff, ideas around. Yeah.
No, I love it. I love that you're like really working on expanding the medium to include others as well. I wish you all the luck with that. That's incredible. And I know that you're giving, you know, a lot of your time to writing the novels, but hopefully when you're done, we'll still see you on stage doing something marvelous with again, the blending of art forms. It sounds really, really like an experience that the audience would really benefit from. And looking at the diversity of the word versus the music versus the dance, it doesn't have to be versus anything. They're all art, right? And they all work together so beautifully. So,
yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens. I really am. I know that also in that first piece, you know, did you grow up with hip hop culture a lot? Were you a big, a performer? Were you a listener? How did it enter your life?
I would say not a performer. Not in terms of like hip hop, but I did go to an arts high school in Detroit, the Detroit School of the Arts. And that was in the mid-90s, which was the peak of the Tupac Biggie period, which was an impactful period in a number of ways for me. That's when I remember really getting into hip hop, was around that time, 8th, 9th grade. And yeah, it had a real life, like it was, there were real life consequences to stuff that was being rapped about. And so I think that made it more tangible for me. That, oh, this art thing is not just art.
Right.
For better or worse, you know?
Right. And Detroit was experiencing something so new and so, you know, like the poverty had really stepped into the scene or was just about to around that time. And so how was it growing up in Detroit?
I mean, I think you ask 10 people, they're going to have their own version of the story. And I think also depending on what part of town you spent most of your time in? You know, there's definitely, you know, you were an East Sider or a West Sider, and you know, like you knew what you were, and you did not
right.
blame the other one. You know, so
yeah.
It, you know, that was what it was. But I would say my personal experience was not that intense. I think
mm-hmm.
probably because of the people that I spent most of my time around, which are artistic
mm-hmm.
people doing theater and dance and all that type of stuff. Like, I think I wasn't quite near where some of the more negative things may have been occurring. So my
okay,
experience
goodness.
Is different, but other folks that I know, you know, they had a different experience. And
yeah. So when you were a kid, and it sounds like when you were in middle school, you got accepted to this art school. Do you think that was what ignited your passion for art in general? Or do you think that even as a small child, you felt drawn?
I would say that's when it became an actual attainable thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had been drawn to it before when I was younger, but I didn't really have an opportunity to try it out on a consistent basis
right.
until I got into the high school where that was a lot of what we did. And then I found what I was good at and what I was not good at. And,
right.
and then a combination of that high school experience along with Mosaic Youth Theater of Detroit, that was a huge force in my creative growth as well. So I was doing both at the
mm-hmm.
same time. And
wow.
It, yeah, they're all incredible people, still grateful to this day for what they gave.
Mm. Well, that's a wonderful thing. That's a wonderful sentiment to share. I mean, you know, life goes on, but we still look back to those people who, you know, created or helped us create the reality of who we are. And I'm glad that you recognize that and give people credit for that. That's a big thing. So we're about halfway through the show, and I was hoping that maybe I could get you to read a second piece.
Yep, I got it right here. All right, so this one I
Perfect.
Always have to explain. I have to explain it first. So
okay.
It's called Charles Riley, which is the name of an incredible, incredible, incredible dancer named Lil Buck. That's his stage name. I believe he's
mm-hmm.
from Memphis. He specializes in juking. And it's a style that is even more remarkable because of his particular skills in applying some ballet training to what his dance style of juking was, and just is incredible. Truly one of my favorite dancers in the world. And so this poem is basically celebrating two people that I think are incredible, Lil Buck and Nina Simone, who are both people who utilize classical training in a different style and brought it into their own style, and then
mm-hmm.
made their style even more incredible than it was already. And so this
yeah.
poem, and that's the content, but also the form of the poem, it's a contrapuntal poem, which is still not a very well-known form, but
mm-hmm.
it's on the page. It's usually it's two columns. So like your left column is a single poem that you would read vertically, and then the right poem, you read that vertically, and then you read across both poems, top to bottom, for like the third quote-unquote poem, you know?
Oh, wow.
So that...
Incredible. That sounds very difficult.
It's, I mean, yes, but it's so fun when you pull it off. So this, I had to explain the form and the content, and now I can just read it. So I'm going to read the first bit, and I'm going to pause, and then you know I'm going to get to the second poem, and then I'll pause, and then you know I'm putting them together.
Oh, awesome.
All right. Here we go. Charles Riley. You go by Lil Buck, but Your name is Charles Riley, as if rocking a hip-hop name to conceal the ballet in your pop-locking body. On your toes, you spin. On your ankles, you bend gleefully, stealing the plie in your bones, slipping home unscathed. The languishing piano subsumed in your Memphis grit, as if the entire Black Renaissance were reborn here in the flesh of a young Black man at risk of being swallowed down, of absorbing in older music in the haunt of falling. You don't belong here. Dancing in the Baroque man's attic, Nina, Eunice Wayman, harbinger of holified rage, surging from your hands, loaded, always at the ready, the zip gun wrapped in cords, glowering from the hate in your mouth, dreaming of burying Debussy in black, its hunger for penance, swallowing it whole, dancing on the tongue until forgiveness of a burning bloomed into a grace, with no fear of closing one's eyes, knowing the slow-cooked and salted joy born in your hands, sweat suckled from the ground. You go by Lil Buck, but you don't belong here. Your name is Charles Riley, as is dancing in the Baroque man's attic, rocking a hip-hop name to conceal Nina, Eunice Wayman, harbinger of the ballet in your pop-locking holified rage, surging from your body. On your toes you spin, hands loaded, always at the ready. On your ankles you bend, gleefully stealing the zip gun wrapped in cords, the plie in your bones slipping home, glowering from the hate in your mouth unscathed, the languishing piano dreaming of burying Debussy in black, subsumed in your Memphis grit, its hunger for penance, swallowing it whole, as if the entire Black Renaissance, dancing on the tongue into forgiveness, were reborn here, in the flesh of a burning, bloomed into a grace of a young Black man at risk, with no fear of closing one's eyes, of being swallowed down, knowing the slow-cooked and salted joy of absorbing in older music, born in your hand, in the haunt of falling, sweat suckled from the ground.
Wow, that's beautiful. And so, you know, to be able to do that, it's amazing. And then to have so much clarity in what you're saying going across the two poems as well as going down the two poems, it's incredible to me. Did that take a long time to write?
I don't remember. It was several years ago. I mean, it definitely took some time to kind of walk your way through it and go back through and edit and stuff. But I don't feel like it was torturously long. It just took some work.
Yeah. And is this poem that you wrote in that style? Did you write others?
It was either the first or the second. I have two in that book that I published. And then I experimented with a couple of more, but I don't think they really turned out as good as these two, so
so you're speaking of a book. I know that you've had several things published. This one that you're speaking of is the one that was published by Right Bloody.
Yep.
And what an honor that is too. So how did you get selected by them to write a book?
You know, they like my poems. I think that's kind of what happened. I mean, there's steps that go along with it. I don't know if the process is exactly the same now for how they select, but, you know, you submit a handful of poems. I think it might even be like just like three poems or something like that. And then they choose finalists from that. Well, this is in the past. Back in my year, they chose some finalists from, you know, that small sample you sent, and then you sent in a full manuscript's worth of poems, and then they also had you do a video of one of your poems and post it online and, you know, share it with people, and then they chose which books from there. So, that was my third time's a charm.
If we wanted to pick it up somewhere, where could we pick up your work?
It's online. You can go anywhere and find it. I think, at this point, because it's been
like
4 years. Yeah, it's called Any Psalm You Want. So if you go to Right Bloody's website and you can find it, you know, they'll probably have a link to where you can still get it. But yeah, it's 4 years ago, so it's not like everywhere or anything. You know,
right,
you can
right,
find
right.
it.
Right. Do you have other publications, other recordings, other videos?
Well, there's a lot of videos on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I've been in this game, the slam game, for many years. So there's lots of poems. I don't even remember everything. Someone would just come up mm-hmm. to me and say, "Oh, I saw such and such poem on YouTube." Like, oh, okay, great. Which one? Because it's like 20 at least, I would say. But yeah. Button poetry is really big right now, and so there's a few of mine in there. You know, YouTube has gotten.
Yeah, cool. Very cool. And I'm glad that you allow them to have you. I know that that's always tough for writers to, you know, well, anybody who's an artist, to give up their art and have it be for free for the people who are experiencing it. But I do appreciate the fact that, you know, you make yourself accessible to more people that way, and I appreciate it personally as a consumer of art. I know that you've been coaching a lot, even though you haven't really been performing as much as you had in the past. Tell me about the mindset, the shift over from performer to coach. How is that?
I think it's different because you have more responsibility, that there are people who are looking to you for,
mm-hmm.
you know, guidance. And, well, see, that's the thing. Like, you have to clarify, like, what are your greater goals in this process? How much are we aiming to be competitively successful? And how much are we aiming to grow each person as the artist that they want to be? And is there a way that both can happen? If that's true, then great. But if only one of those can happen, it can't be the competition, because that's so ephemeral, that's useless. That's not going to grow you. It might even make you worse. So it's more about just changing your priorities. Whereas as a poet, I'm like, I want to do the best that I can, and I want us to be competitively successful, and, you know, the whole nine. And then a coach would say whatever they were going to say. But being as a coach now, I'm like, I can't screw these people up. I gotta keep the big picture in mind.
Yeah. And I'm sure that that's difficult. But I guess you'd have more space in which to deal with that than the actual artist, you know, to look at the bigger picture while the performer is focusing on the right now of it.
I mean, it depends on the person. I can't say what every performer is thinking about, but at least in terms of the roles that we play, they're focused on their poems. But there are also things that they're looking for the coach to understand about the intricacies of competition. Like, you do also need to be able to position them to be as successful as they can be, because that's why they're putting in the time to do the competition. Like, they want to do well. They just don't want to compromise their values or their identity as artists in order to do well. But once they've done that work and you're going to take them to these competitions, as a coach, you're still thinking about, you know, which poems are going to do really well in the first round versus the second, third, or fourth, you know, following the rhythms of a slam and what the audience is responding to, and being flexible in that sense. You know, I still think that sort of, that intricate knowledge that a coach brings is important on both facets.
Yeah, and I hate to cut you off, but I want to make sure that we get your last poem in. Thank you so much for being with us, Kari, and I wish you all the success in the world. If you want to come on when your books are coming out or any time before that and do some promo of it, feel free to contact me. I'd love to have you on again.
Sounds great. Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. And here's... Go ahead.
This poem is called A Thank You to Moonlight, as in the movie Moonlight. I cannot blame the ocean for the drowning body. All the ocean knows is to welcome and contain, name every inhabitant a prayer. I cannot blame the body for drowning, for merely accepting evolution's edict. Someone somewhere decided that our lungs could only be loved in one way. Jesus walked on water when I needed him to laugh in it. The original meaning of drowning is to be swallowed up by water. Who decided that to be swallowed up requires the beloved to die? This boy, held parallel to the ripples of a thousand buried breaths, does not know he is rehearsing the terrors of his own heart, that one day desire, that holy and hidden thing, will draw him leagues down into the primordial abyss with all its starve and danger, its mercy and bone, finally dark as his own shell, his own buried tongue.